You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host extraordinaire, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox.
And thank you, Alan. It's good to be back in the studio with you again.
Absolutely.
Well, each week we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing options to raising the quality of life for the whole family.
And we will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
With each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we have been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in the field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we'll bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Our guest today, Mary Somerset, is an author, speaker, and certified professional coach working with executives and teams from a variety of industries. With a business background and marketing and strategic partnerships, Mary is able to assist clients to discover their strengths and move forward. She is also a Braveheart Woman resonator with both online and in-person communities focused on letting go of resistance and moving from surviving to thriving. Now, Mary helps people shed unwanted, unproductive thoughts and behaviors and infuse themselves with optimism, inspiration, and success. Happier, more focused people leading healthier lives. Now, directing businesses to a brighter future. Now, Melody, I had a chance to take a look at the book, and one of the things that I noticed is that Mary seems to talk a lot about in the book some of the same techniques that you use in your practice.
Oh, yeah. What I really love is she talks about the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, who mm-hmm. I just love, and he's the basis of a lot of what I do because they encapsulate a lot of the cognitive behavioral techniques kind of in a nutshell, which I really like. And I'm thrilled that she's going to be with us today, and actually she's here with us now.
Well, Mary, she lives in Portland, Oregon, and she is with us now. So, Mary, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, it's great to be here. Nice to hear both of you.
Well, it's wonderful that you're here, and I really loved your book because it felt like I was in my own session. But I really liked how you kind of simplified it and really explained things step by step by step.
Yes, we got very excited about, you know, what's going on in neuroscience, especially neuroplasticity, and thought, gosh, you know, more people need access to this, so let's kind of make a shorter, pithy book and make it slightly irreverent and fun so that people won't be intimidated by the information, and that seems to be working well.
Well, you do have a lot of humor in the book, which I really appreciate, and a lot of insight and a lot of short little quips here and there that encapsulate things, so which makes it easier for a reader who doesn't want to sit and listen to really boring technical terms of everything.
Right. Yeah, lots of people are moving way too fast to do that, right? I mean, you have to stop and focus in on academic journals or scientific books to get at this detail, but then making it more readable for others, that was our goal.
Well, you definitely, I mean, the title, Letting Go for Fun and Profit, is wonderful, and it is fun just reading the book, I have to say.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really great to hear.
So I was just curious on how, like, maybe parents can incorporate some of these skills and tools that you talk about in this and maybe understand how the brain works a little bit more.
Yes, I think some of the chapters, especially like on anger management, and also playing to your strengths. I think a lot of us get into the habit of trying to correct our weaknesses, but if we really think about what are our strengths and helping children identify what their strengths are, you know, parents can do this as well. You can start to see, okay, well, I can help my child, encourage them to develop this strength rather than beating them up for not having, you know, that or having a weakness instead. And we find that amazingly helpful in business, but I'm sure it also works very well in a family setting.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I was at a seminar recently with John Maxwell, And one of the things that he pointed out, the same thing about focusing on your strengths, and he said that when he was in school, his worst thing was math. And so the teachers kept beating him over the head. You have to work on math. You have to work on math. And he said one of the great things about his parents is they said, you know what? You are a great speaker. You are great with history. You're great with English. Do the things that you're strong, and guess what? You can hire somebody later on to count your money because you're going to be successful.
that. Yes, that's very helpful. You know, we just don't need more negative voices in our brains, you know, telling us, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. And what I find fascinating about this for children and for parents and grandparents is that we can change at any age. I mean, we used to think things stopped growing in our brains at early age. Not true. And I love the studies that say, you know, if young people do a test and seniors do the same test, if there's a time limit, yes, the young people will win, but otherwise they will get the same results. So if you're willing to take a little bit more time when you're older, you can get the same results. Your brain is actually set up to do that, which I find that to be awesome.
Well, I think learning and continuous learning definitely expands the brain and goes into that neuroplasticity that we like to talk about. And actually, can you talk about the three, you know, different ways? And I'm sure there's more than that, but I know you talk about three distinct ways of the brain and its neuroplasticity.
Yes, I mean, the brain helps us tremendously. There are many different ways that it can do that. And, you know, the idea, you know, what she's telling us, I think the brain, we're set up, you know, with the idea that we can make changes in our life, you know, changing for good, and we can go through that whole process. And then the neuroplasticity is the idea that your brain actually creates new neural pathways if you're able to focus. So actual effort, and that's why meditation is so important. It can reactivate long dormant circuitry. You know, the idea that once you learn how to ride a bike, you can pick it up again. It can create new circuitry. So whenever you learn something new, your brain actually strengthens existing neural connections. So you're creating new synapses. Mm-hmm. And that's so wonderful. It turns out that the most plastic of all of them are the happiness neural pathways. So we're actually designed to be happier than we might often be. And then the third one is it can rewire circuitry. So parts of your brain that were used for one purpose can be recast to use for others. And that's what we see happening, what we hear in the news about stroke victims and about using a limb or learning how to speak after some neurons have been destroyed. So those three things, reactivate long dormant circuitry, create new circuitry, and rewire circuitry.
Now, Mary,
are the main benefits of neuroplasticity.
And one of the things that I remember from college where they talked about, you know, at 21 days, they're saying that in regards to being able to set up a new path or to gain a new habit, you know, they say 21 days is sort of a benchmark. Does that sound about right, or does it really depend on what it is we're trying to reestablish?
Well, what they've decided now, or what the latest research anyway, is that it's more like 2 to 3 months of concentrated, focused effort. Now, you can learn to start flossing your teeth every day in 21 days. You know, there are some very simple, practical things that you can do to build habits. But if you're really trying to make a serious change in your life, you know, like to lose weight or quit smoking or break a habit of anger, you know, it's going to take probably 2 to 3 months of focused effort before you start seeing real changes. I mean, you can start seeing changes right away. I shouldn't say that. You can start feeling better right away. I know that's true. But the idea that it's not a quick fix. I mean, change does take time. But the exciting thing about it is that it's now possible, and that being able to actually change your neural pathways, I mean, wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think so too. And I try to describe that a lot to my clients. So I like your book because it's something I could recommend for them to go get and sit and read. And they come back in and they go, oh, that's what Dr. Melody's talking about. Because you do explain it so wonderfully in there. And you, like I said earlier, you go through a lot of the four agreements and all that. But I want to go back to what you talked about, you know, what's nice in the book that you could help parents with, and this book could help parents, is helping their children with anger, or maybe even anger with themselves, on how to deal with it. And you describe strategies of letting go of anger and even making your anger work for you and not against you. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, the anger management part. My co-author, Jean Stoll, she has 25 years in public health, and she's done a lot of work with anger management. And a lot of times when people get angry, they don't know what's happening to them. You know, something triggers it, and they just take off. And they also feel like they're the only ones who get angry. So part of the benefit of a book like this is that people can read stories about actual people, actual sons and daughters, you know, who have gone through anger issues based on, usually the trigger is some life event, you know, a parent gets sick, or a parent gets in an accident or dies, or something happens and the dynamics in the family change, and that's when the anger starts coming up. So there are very tried and true methods for getting over the anger, but understanding that working with your brain is set up to help you with that. So it's all about making the choice to make the change and not falling into the idea that we are victims and that we can't, you know, we can't control this stuff, because really we can. But it takes focused effort. That's the issue.
And it also takes the buy-in of the person to, like you had mentioned, want to change. But I thought it was really interesting when you said earlier that our brains are set up to be happier than we think we can be.
Well, there's a lot of support out there for not changing, right? And there's a lot of support that says, oh, you know, you have a conversation with your friend and you're complaining about something, and they just support you in your complaining. And yeah, that's not helpful. I mean, it's better to be able to say to the person, look, you know, you are a brilliant person. You are going to overcome this. This is going to be great for you, and here are some strategies for doing it. You know, that would be more helpful than just agreeing with someone in their misery. I mean, the idea of misery loves company is definitely true, but overcoming that, or understanding that there's a way out of that, that we can be happier. And in pretty much in every moment, it's a choice for us, whether we want to, you know, feel victimized by what's happening, or we want to say, yes, let's move forward. We can do this and have fun with it. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do any of this if I wasn't having fun with it.
Right. But, you know, when you mentioned about the misery loves company, but I think happiness loves company even more. And I
that's a good point. Yeah, and that's another key ingredient, is making sure you surround yourself with people who are very supportive. I mean, even Epictetus in 100 AD said that, you know, look, here's the deal. If you want to have a productive, happy life, surround yourself with people who are also happy and productive and support you. So that's a huge thing, and very difficult for a lot of us to let go of misaligned relationships, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that are not supporting us or not helping us, and really look around and say, okay, who can I hang around with, you know, that is going to make it better for me? And usually in relationships, if one spouse takes that initiative, the other one will follow. It just might be a little bit later, but they will follow. Inspiration is a factor. And mm-hmm. if we're here to inspire each other, then it really works.
Right. And that is one of the things I find when clients come into the office and they start getting healthier and learning better habits to create more happiness for themselves and their life and look at things differently, then they end up going, well, I can't be friends with these people anymore because they're so negative and they're always taking, and I feel so horrible whenever I'm done talking with them. So it's letting go of the relationships that don't work anymore. And that in and of itself could be a grieving process. But at the end, I think people are much more cognizant of the friends that they're making, the new friends that they're using to replace who they used to be with. And that's what's really hard with teenagers. Is you see, as a parent, they're hanging out with kids that are really negative, doing some things you don't want them to do, or maybe have their own anger issues, and you're finding your own child getting a little bit more sniffy here and there. And, you know, trying to get them away from someone they want to hang out with is probably the hardest challenge for any parent.
I think so, and that's why, you know, it has to be fun. And to be able to show them, you know, if they're teenagers, then they probably are pretty skilled online. And so this 20-minute test that StrengthFinders has mm-hmm. come up with is just awesome because it really prints out your five top strengths, and it's unique to each user. So it's not like a general thing, oh, if you have these things, this is how it's going to be. They actually are able to synthesize all your different strengths and pop out who you are, which to a teenager could be immensely helpful.
Right.
Oh, these are my strengths. This is where I'm going. And then you could have a conversation with the parents, especially if the parents also do it, mm-hmm. and just share with each other what are our strengths and how are we doing this, and have it be more of a fun sort of experience.
Right. I know you talk about it in your book, and for those that don't know, StrengthFinder 2.0 is a book, and it has a special code in the back for you to go online and take this 20-minute test. And what I found extraordinary, because I've worked at corporations where they had all of those in leadership roles take this so they could find out who their leaders are and who they wanted us to work with. But I love the idea of taking it into the family and having the family do it as a whole. You could kind of see the corporation of the family and how it plays out and what roles. But the StrengthFinder I thought was interesting in that things I thought I was really strong on, other things I never thought I was strong on came up ahead of that. And that was really surprising for me.
Interesting. Yes. Well, maybe just your life path has put you in places to use some strengths and not others. That happens.
Well,
sometimes.
I've definitely lived long enough for that. So.
Yes.
So what, you know, using the StrengthFinders, I mean, how can we teach our kids to play to those strengths instead of trying to shore up all the weaknesses that it seems like teachers and other people always point out?
Well, part of being a teenager is not knowing who you are, right, to a large extent, and trying to figure it out. What is all this about? And all those hormones raging and all that going on. And the idea that they even have strengths can be very encouraging to them. Mm-hmm. Where they can say, hey, yeah, oh, okay, I do know how to do this. That's really good. And I could move in that direction. And there are all kinds of resources based on those strengths that you can tap into as well. Different jobs and things like that work, vocations, everything that is connected to people with those kinds of strengths. Mm-hmm. So that's a way just to have start a discussion around, you know, what direction you want to go in. But I think opening it up for the parents to open it up and do it as well and share that with the teenagers, then the teens can then really look at, okay, I've got something good going on, and my parents understand it. I think one of the largest issues with parents not understanding the children that their teens hang with is this wall between us and them. Mm-hmm. So anything that we can do to break down that wall and welcome, you know, the choices that our children are making and understand it. Because who knows, maybe that teen will get enough insight to talk about it to one of his friends, and it could spread. There's just a lot of misunderstanding going on mm-hmm. in the teenage years, we all
mm-hmm. And now, Mary, we have a listener, kind of a combination question and comment that has just come in, and this one reads, my husband and two teens joined me over Christmas using Luminicity, in parentheses, they have brain training, which is working with neuroscientists, teachers, etc., to advance the field of neuroscience. I have seen amazing improvement in my kids' attitudes and schoolwork since they started this process. Can you describe how these learning tools work to achieve that?
Yes, Lumosity is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the idea there is really they make it fun because they have puzzles and word games and things like that. And what they're doing is triggering new experiences, and that is what makes the change in your neural pathways. You're actually building new neural pathways by doing that. And so the more neural pathways you have, the less often you're going to be triggered by the same thing. You're going to open it up. You're going to expand your horizons, basically. And they do that by practicing. If you're doing that two or three times a week, you're actually growing your neural pathways. And especially for teenagers who, you know, have a lot ahead of them, you know, this could be very helpful. And they've done a great job. I've checked them out, and they've done a great job with really creating the puzzles that children or young people love, and mm-hmm. we all love it, but I think especially teenagers. Okay, here's something I could try to figure out. It's not a video game, but it does create a new neural pathways for these young people, and that's because they're repeating the exercise over and over again. It looks different to them, but it's actually the same thing of extending your neural pathways in a certain direction, mm-hmm. and that's more creative. And I believe that the angst that teenagers have to a large extent is the lack of creativity, you know, of not having all this energy to create but not having a focused way to do it. Mm-hmm. So using Lumosity and other tools like that can be very helpful for settling a child and helping them to understand, hey, there's a lot more to this than I thought.
Yeah, and I actually love playing that game too. It's wonderful and it is challenging. I just find a lot of people, like you said, it puts new challenges or builds new experiences, so that expands the brain. You know, the struggle are for people that don't want to be challenged that way, that are resistant to that change or developing those new skills or having those new experiences. But in your book, you kind of break down ways to go past that barrier. You take people past that in your book.
Yes. Yes, you can go past that. And, you know, I know you probably have heard of this, but maybe your listeners haven't, the study they did with the Tibetan monks. And Richard Davidson, who's really a leader in the emotional life of your brain, he has a best-selling book out on it now, but he... you know, in 2000, started doing work with Tibetan monks, and they wired them all up and checked out their neural pathways while they were meditating. And then they found out afterwards that they retained that state to a large degree after they stopped meditating, which showed them that their ability to integrate all of their different circuits on the focus of compassion was immensely helpful. Mm-hmm. And the Dalai Lama laughed and said, oh, you wouldn't get the same results from me because I have a lot of business stuff I have to attend to and I'm flying all over the place. And I'm not doing that deep meditation in the same way they are. Mm-hmm. So from that, they really started to understand that, wow, you know, our emotions, what we are doing is totally connected to our brain. So even when we're hungry, it's not our stomach, it's our brain telling us we're hungry. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, was really inspirational, that they were able to achieve these very integrated states in the brain, which means very healthy states in mm-hmm. the brain, to because of the meditation and because of the focus and the consistent effort to focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why throughout the book, we put stories of people who really wanted to do one thing. Here's one thing I wanted to do, and I just kept thinking about it until I got it done. Mm-hmm. And so there's a focus element to changing the brain for the better that is just inherent in the whole concept of neuroplasticity.
Now, I was curious about, you know, being that focused brain and wanting to do that. What comes up sometimes where people are even judgmental about themselves? They have negative thoughts and they're judgmental about not doing it right or doing these exercises good enough or making the changes fast enough. How would you address that?
Well, there are a lot of different strategies because negative thoughts decrease brain activity. So the more negative thoughts you have, the less functional your brain actually is. Mm-hmm. So when you start to have a negative thought, you could come up with something, you know, like blink your eyes or say the word stop or whatever works for you. Mm-hmm. And then think about, change it to a thought. Like one thing that I think works very well is to think about one time in your life that was very joyous. I mean, a deep kind of joy. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like, I went to the Seychelles Islands after graduate school, and I'd had a really rough time. I got married, divorced, and, you know, it was just very challenging. And I was in my 20s, and I went to the Seychelles, and nobody knew me there. I had one friend I kind of knew, and she was leaving in a few weeks. So here I was, literally the other side of the world from where I went to high school. And I remember diving in that water and coming up and seeing this beautiful mountain covered with vegetation. And I realized that I could just wash away my past and start over, and nobody would know me. I was a brand new person. So whenever I was then later in business and You know, I still use that meditation. I still, when I'm about to do something difficult, I close my eyes. I think about that washing away of the past and being fully in the present, and then I walk into the room or I give the speech or whatever it is. So taking a moment like that from your own life, you know, that brings you joy. Maybe it was the birth of your first child, or maybe it was, you know, when you really understood your child you who wanted something, you finally were able to give it to them in the way they could receive it. Mm-hmm. Some part of joy, and you just make that your own and start meditating on that and keeping that available to you, so that when you're running into a difficult situation or a challenging situation, just give yourself the moment to close your eyes and think about that. Feel it viscerally. Take mm-hmm. it in. Be that moment. And that will shift things for you. And it works. It really works. Mm-hmm. We're not making this stuff up.
No, there's enough data behind it, enough science yes. behind it that's been proven to be true, and it definitely works. I know we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about assumptions, because you talk about that in the book, and I know that's in the Four Agreements as well. And I know when I work with teenagers and I really get that in their head to stop making assumptions, their life really changes, because they're not jumping to conclusions and taking things personally anymore, therefore not getting as reactive. And maybe you could talk a little bit more about all that when we get back in just a moment, okay?
All right. Go ahead. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. You've got both of us today, both Alan Cardoza and myself, Dr. Melody Fox. And our guest today is Mary Somerset, author, speaker, and certified professional coach, who co-wrote a wonderful book called Letting Go for Fun and Profit. And it's a fantastic book. It's an easy read. It goes through a lot of different techniques and explains neuroplasticity and how the brain changes and how you could actually change your brain to have a happier and healthier life, I think, and have fun doing it. Right, Mary?
Yes. Yes, you can definitely do that. And part of the assumptions is we just forget to ask for what we want. Mm-hmm. And we imagine that somebody else knows what we want, and then if they don't produce, we get resentful.
Right.
It's kind of a nasty circle, but it happens on a regular basis.
Well, and I think it's pretty normal, too, because we make assumptions based on past experiences in order to survive, or how we think we need, what we need to do to survive in the here and now, instead of letting go of the past of what happened before and not assuming that this person is going to say the same thing or think the same thing or behave the same way. We jump to those conclusions, and that kind of interferes in relationships too.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And we ask people to write out affirmations. You know, I will ask for what I want and post that in three places in your house or place of work. And then practice thinking the thought 10 times a day. You know, I am not going to make an assumption. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how that can change your life. I mean, I'm glad you really like that book by Ruiz, The Four Agreements. I really believe if that book is practiced, you can almost become a conscious being.
Oh, yeah. Very challenging, but
wonderful book.
Well, I first came across this book because my father sent it to me. He works with people in jail out in Texas. He does a lot of work with the stress clinic out there and does a lot of work with the inmates. And it's required reading in his groups in the jail for every inmate to read that book.
Wow, that's great. That's brilliant.
And then he said it to me, and I'm going, this is fantastic. So I started using it in my teen groups and teaching the Four Agreements within the context of doing the group for the year. And the greatest joy is at the end of the year where the children come back and say, you know, I learned not to take things personally. I'm not making assumptions. I'm asking for clarification. So they don't get into the fights or think that person's dogging them when actually that guy has gas or something. You know? it's not personal.
Yeah.
And so, I love that. And I know in your book you write how one of the principal tenets in the Four Agreements is all the sadness and drama you have lived in your life is rooted in making assumptions and taking things personally. The whole world of control between humans is based on that. So take a moment and consider this. And you talk about that and you expand upon that so beautifully in your book as well.
Oh, thank you so much. I really, that's one for me, don't make assumptions. I still remind myself of that every day.
Well, ditto here.
Now, Mary, one of the things, and we're blessed, I know Melody and I are, to be able to do a job that we can consider play, a job that we can enjoy. I look at it and I say, you know, it's a blessing to be able to do something where you feel like you're making a difference in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. But for the majority of people, explain some of the ways that they can turn work into play. If it's not already there for them, how can they turn it into play and completely change how the brain perceives and acts upon the situations or tasks that they're doing?
Well, some people are very visual, and for those people, I would say really create a vision board. And you can draw on the vision board and have fun with it, imagine yourself the new person you want to be, put up pictures, pathways, you know, how it's going to work, favorite sayings or quotations, anything that inspires you to move in that direction. And then make sure you look at that vision board, put it in a very prominent place in your house and look at it every day, meditate on it, see yourself doing that. And then that can make it fun. It makes it more interesting because it's really participatory and it gets people motivated. So I love the vision board. I think that's a wonderful way to help start people letting go of resistance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In fact, I've had one I think I've had for 20 years that's up in my bedroom, so every time I wake up, I still see it. It's starting to peel off from the glue. I glued it on, but, you know, the essence of it is still there.
That's great. Yeah, the nice thing about a vision board is they usually come with erasers, so you can start over. You know, you can say, okay, well, I accomplished that goal, now what's my next one? And you put it up there. And you put beautiful colors on it and just have fun with it. It's really, you can even come up with music that goes along with it. Pick songs that match the mood that you want and keep that going while you're doing your meditation on that event and just liven it up in any way that you can.
Well, I guess you could probably do it online and really make a production of it on your computer and make that your screensaver or something.
Yes, that's a very good idea. Yes,
bring
so
it up.
You see it every time you log on. That's a great idea.
Right. Instead of the old technology of cut and paste and glue.
Yes, and you're right. And it might be good to do both so that you're in both worlds. You're mm-hmm. actually integrating your online world and your offline world.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go, Melody. You have a new
new project.
A new project to work on, the Dr. Melody screensaver. And then you can help them make this beautiful screensaver.
Alan, do you remember that is not my strength, technology?
Yes, but you just have to be the thinking behind it.
I can hire somebody else
to do the technical part, and you just put it out there that this is going to be your visioning screensaver, the Dr. Melody visioning screensaver.
Yeah, there's an app for that.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have so many wonderful ideas like that and many more in your book. And I mean, it's not a long book either. It's not like 500 pages. So, I just can't get over how condensed and how concise your book is, Mary.
Well, thank you so much, Melody. And that was intentional. You know, we know that people are really busy and we wanted it to be a short book. And we wanted it to be a book that people could pick up and put down. And we've tested it, both my co-author and I have tested it. Said, well, I'm feeling a little down today. I reread the book and I feel better, you know, because there's so many activities that I can do to jumpstart my mood and get going again. So that I think is really why we did it. We wanted it to be you don't have to be an academic or a scientist to read this mm-hmm. book. It's really for the rest of us, this book. And that's why I'm so passionate about wanting to talk about it and let people know about it, because you can keep it by your bedside and pick it up. Just read a chapter at a time if you want. It will still make a difference.
Absolutely. And I'm usually a hardcover book person, but lately I've gotten into the Nook thing. And I actually downloaded your book onto my Nook, and that's literally taking it with me everywhere. And it's
wonderful. That's great to hear. Yes, the Kindle and Nook versions are selling really well. And, you can all get the hard copies on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other sites all over the place. Mm-hmm. So it's available, and it's fun.
Yeah, it is.
The reviews are really good, I'm very happy to say. So that's also helpful.
Well, I can't imagine any therapist that wouldn't review it and think of it very highly, because it encapsulates everything and techniques that we do and teach our clients too. So, I just love it. It's just great. Now, we have another listener question here. I am a counselor at a large high school in Des Moines and in charge of activities in our after-school program, and I was reading your page on Answers website and was curious if your book provides activities or if you could suggest materials that we could access for our school.
Yes, the way the book is structured is that we start with a funny or wise quotation, and then we have a chapter that's not more than 5 or 6 pages, and at the end of every chapter there's a very specific activity for each of the chapters. And so that could be a class project that you could do these activities. You could do these activities together.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, you can elaborate on. But the vision board was one, and then really looking at, you could have, depending on the age of the children in the class, you could have balloons and mark the balloons with all the different obstacles that they have, and then have the children let go of the balloons one at a time and see them go. Things like that. You can elaborate on the basic structure of the activities that we've provided. But very much we want this to be an action-oriented book, hands-on. So you get the book, you read, you understand what's going on, you do the activity, and then you see the transformation, which is so much fun.
Well, and it really is set up that way. That's why I'm saying it's so user-friendly. And I love a lot of the activities you have in there. One area you talk about relaxation, and I'm big into deep breathing and four-square breathing and other things like that, and talking about using imagery, and you talked earlier about visualization of a relaxing experience and using the word like calm or relax if you're in an anger state to take some of that and diffuse that. So you really get into there. Also, you talk about using humor, which is really important, or changing your environment. You have so many skills and tools in here and ideas to help people. And I also noticed that you also go into eating right and talking about taking care of your health.
Yes. So what we did was we said, okay, here are what we think are the main areas of life, right? If you can understand something new about each of these areas, so if you play to your strengths, anger management, what happens when you're unemployed, what about resiliency, how to keep moving, and forgiveness, forgiveness of yourself as well as others. And we stored these things, we stored these activities and happenings and experiences in our body. And so being able to release them, release those unproductive cellular memories through these activities can be immensely helpful.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about, how the brain works and releasing that. And actually you get into when you're eating too much chocolate, or maybe you've been drinking, or how that affects the brain and the hippocampus and everything else. And you get into the science of the neuropathways and how it all works, and you break it down.
Yes, because I believe in science. I think it's necessary to be practical about this stuff. I love the meditation, I love the visualization, and I really understand the power of that. At the same time, I really want it to be grounded in science. So, I read books called Pictures of the Mind, for example, that actually have photographs of the mind, the neural pathways changing. They work with clients or patients and watch them change their brains. They have them focus on certain things over a period of time, and they actually take pictures of their brain as they're doing it, and you can actually see the neural pathways growing over time. That's
really
amazing
cool.
to me. And I thought, once I saw those pictures, I was even more inspired. I think something deep in me understood this, but to actually see the pictures, You know, let's let everybody know that this is not anything anybody's making up. This is real science, mm-hmm. and it is moving rapidly. And there are a number of authors. I think my favorite at the moment is this Richard Davidson, PhD, who wrote The Emotional Life of Your Brain. And he's really dedicated to understanding how attitude changes can change your brain. And that's where I like to live, too.
Yeah. Now, I love your point about the pictures. And I think that, you know, from a science standpoint, that would be great if they were starting to teach children right away. I mean, show them the pictures. Let them see it. They need that kind of evidence. And also, we have another question coming in. This is an email that comes in, and it reads, I am a school psychologist that deals with many students having trouble with letting go of a lot of things, including addictions. It says, please share how we can counsel teachers and teenagers in how to let go of addictions such as food and drugs.
Well, I would refer to Melody on that. I mean, from our point of view and from what the neuroplasticity says is that it's possible to do it, and it's possible to do it in new ways. So we have, you know, all kinds of references in our book to go deeper, but even starting with the same activities that we're recommending here, starting that child can start to see a new thought happening. Mm-hmm. And what I love the most is, as I mentioned earlier, is that the neuro pathways that are the most plastic, the most easy to change, are the ones that are our happiness pathways. So for a young person, especially a person who's addicted, to see that how can you interrupt that addiction? How can you interrupt that pattern mm-hmm. and introduce something new? So I am not a trained psychologist, but I would let Melody talk more on that.
Well, but before we do that, when you mentioned about the happiness portion being, you know, having been more pliable, I guess, is that something that works both ways? In other words, you know, at the same time, does it mean that we can get there and establish more of a pattern of happiness, but at the same time, does it make it to where we can easily get away from it?
There's training that they're doing to, you know, recirculate, you know, so that you have one thought, like the addictive thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a new thought in place, like non-addiction or riding a bike or something like that, something different.
Mm-hmm.
And then you focus on the new one and you develop the new pathway and the new pathway, and that will start to make a change. But there's a lot more to overcoming addiction than I'm capable of talking about.
And a lot more than talking in the last 5 minutes we have here. But but along those lines, too, one of the things that children and teens and adults aren't doing a lot of is moving. And that creates a lot of circulation in the brain and more oxygen being pumped into the brain and blood flow through the whole body. And I don't want to get all technical and all that, but one of the things which I really love in your chapter, you talk about dancing. And I know growing up, I spent hours and hours and hours dancing. That was my therapy.
So, yes,
you know,
me too.
You know, just,
I think that's how I got through high school, actually.
Yeah, me too, and the Air Force. I remember being in the Air Force and being behind the barracks and turning on the music and just dancing for hours, and I didn't care who watched. They probably thought I was nuts,
right.
But that's okay. But it diffused a lot of the stress of being in that environment as well, to be able to move and stretch and dance and create beauty and be in the moment and listening to your favorite music. And you talk about just dance and just move. It, you know, dance around the kitchen, do something, and just get that movement going.
Yes, because I think people are allergic to the word exercise. I mean, I think when people hear the word exercise, something turns off.
Oh, no.
I've heard that so many times, I'm not even going to listen.
I don't want to sweat anymore.
So instead, if we say, hey, how about we just keep moving? You know, I think everyone can relate to that because movement feels good. You know, if you're driving in a car, you stop, you walk around, oh, it feels great to walk. So it's the same kind of thing where we get stuck. So if we keep moving, and everyone has favorite music, you know, put some favorite music on, actually make the effort to put that music on, and then just move however you want,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the more you move. But the amazing thing about this is that you really, according to most of the scientists and physiologists out there is if you move 30 minutes a day, you know, not even all at the same time, 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the afternoon, 10 minutes at night, seriously move and focus on your moving, you can stay healthy. Because we were meant to move. Our bodies are created to move. And dancing is obviously a lot of fun for those of us who like to dance, right? Maybe somebody else likes to do calisthenics. Somebody else likes to ride a bike. Somebody else likes to play racquetball. Whatever it is, just keep the body moving, and that keeps your brain moving as well.
And if you ever watch small children, they jump around, they twirl around, make windmill movements, and look like a tree, and do all these fun things. But I think sometimes as you get into your teen years, you're more self-conscious, and you're adults, and it's like, well, I can't jump around and look that silly, and, you know, what will other people think? And then what will I think? So that self-judgment and all that, so that could become a challenge for people to go, wait, stop. It's okay for me to have fun and move, and who cares what anybody else thinks?
Yes, and you can do this on your own. Right? I mean, you know, if you have self-esteem issues, which practically all teenagers do, do it in your room. You know, turn on the music in your room and just rock out. I mean, I think it's very fun. I mean, maybe you want to play air guitar. You know, whatever it is, just rock out and have fun with it, because moving, keeping moving, is really essential for your brain to keep moving as well.
Yeah, and I also like in the book how you make it very here and now. You talk about Mark Ballas from Dancing with the Stars, and just by looking at him and how strong he is, and he's always ripping off his shirt anyway on that show.
I know, it's hilarious on that show. They're all ripping off their shirts.
I know, but
now
they have that core muscle and the flexibility and that
funny
dance and that constant movement provides, so you don't have to go to the gym and just do weights and push-ups and everything.
No, you can create your own movement, which is joyful, right? If you want to make like a windmill or a tree or an elephant's trunk or whatever it is, you know, you can have fun with it. And trust yourself, because you will know once you start moving, you're going to feel better. It's just a natural human thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that's what we want everybody to do. Everybody out there that's listening, if you're sitting
at
your computer and you're not driving, exactly, if you're sitting at your computer, stand up, make a tree, or make whatever it is that makes you feel good. Make windmills with your arms, jump up and down, do something that gets the heart pumping, and
have
just
fun.
Have fun with it. Whatever it is, just have fun with it.
Yes, I mean, when we started talking about this chapter, I got up and started walking around my office. You know, it's like, okay, that's right. I got to remember that. Keep moving.
Yeah. And you talk a lot about moving and the benefits of walking, too, about how it deflects diabetes, how it could actually soup up your sex life. It could save you on gym costs. It's affordable, and it could help get you off your meds eventually, too, at least according to the National Walkers Health Study. So, you know, that you talk about in the book, and it plays such a great role. And so I'm glad to hear you're up walking around your office right now. You practice
yes.
what you preach, Mary. That's great.
Yes, walking is a huge benefit, huge, huge benefit. And, you know, it can help fade fibromyalgia pain. It even helps beat breast cancer for some people. I mean, yeah, it's amazing what it can do for you. So walking. And if you don't live in a nice neighborhood, you can go to the mall and walk around the mall. You know, but there's some place to walk, and really get together with friends and go for a walk, because that's even more fun.
Right, and we do have to wrap things up in just a second, but I'm going to encourage people to go get the book. It is definitely worth the money, and it's not that pricey either. It's definitely worth it, but read the last chapter especially, chapter, I can't remember, but I think it's chapter 12, where you talk about creating your life. Learn to create your life. Use all these skills you learned in the chapters before that Mary has so willingly given to you along with her friend Jean Stoll. So, you know, just take advantage of what's there. It is such a fantastic book. And Mary, I can't thank you enough for being on our show of Answers for the Family today.
Oh, it was really delightful to meet both of you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And, also, if people want to follow what I'm doing, they can go to my blog, which is embracechangefindjoy.wordpress.com.
Okay, and we should get that on our website, so we'll have that updated on our website. So if you don't have a pen right now to write it down or don't remember, you can get that information. Again, any other food for thought real quick, Mary, before we sign off?
Well, I encourage everyone to become their own poet, and we end the book with a poem that's a modern poem that really helps everyone to understand how to just flow with their life, and positive things are out there. Go get them.
Go get them.
Absolutely.
You.
And everybody, pick something that is important to you and go get it, and be with us again next week.
For more Answers for the Family.
Thank you.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.